This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jadson.
All right, and welcome back to Cinema Recap. We've got your hosts, John Bonham, as always, joined by Mark Jackson. Mark, it seems like it's been a little while. Anything new with you?
Man, you know, I just feel like both of us have kind of been doing life. You know, you've been finalizing this move, and, you know, I had some stuff going on at work. I mean, I still have my job and everything, but... You know, we kind of both have been having our attention pulled in different directions. So I don't know if necessarily anything new. I kind of now just feel like things are slowly but surely starting to get back to normal. So that's a plus for me because I'm very much a systematic person. So I don't know about yourself.
Yeah, I like a very set routine every day. And, you know, right now I'm sitting in a beach chair in my spare bedroom, computer on my lap, you know, just completed a cross-country move, which I guess I'm torn on. Part of it was great, and then, you know, the first half in, you know, California and Wyoming and Utah was beautiful, and then you get to Kansas and Kansas and Missouri, it's nothing. So I'm not sure if I could really recommend a cross-country drive to people or not. But at the very least, it was an experience.
Well, that's always good to hear. Experiences are sometimes hard to come by. So doesn't sound like you are itching, though, to do it again if you had to do it the reverse and go back in a couple of years. I'm sure you would, maybe, but maybe you would have some other people doing the brunt of the work for you.
Yeah, if I had to, I guess I would. You know, driving cross country with a cat makes it a little less enjoyable.
Yeah,
where you know you can't really stop off and enjoy everything that United States has to offer.
Right.
So that was one downfall, but you know, nonetheless, we made it. Just waiting for our stuff to arrive. Finally, able to hit the theater again and see a movie, which just feels like it's been a while. So I think things are falling into place.
All right, man. Great to hear.
All right. Well, I think with that, we can probably kick off the real news section.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
Without further ado, Mark, please feel free to take it away.
Yeah, absolutely. So you and I will both be getting into this in depth a lot, but I guess we'll just lead with some news we heard about an hour before we went live. But John Wick 4 is officially greenlit, and I believe the date that they're aiming for is, I don't know if they have an exact date, but May 2021. So one would presume around the same time that this movie just came out.
Yeah, and I mean, why not? You know, I think there was some chatter that it would be, you know, a John Wick trilogy. But when every movie has essentially doubled the domestic opening of the previous one, I mean, I guess you got to strike while the iron's hot. You know, Keanu Reeves, his career has been a little up and down. And I guess at this point, it's safe to say it's, you know, his success has been franchise-based. So why not keep churning him out while he's, you know, got a few years left in the tank?
Yeah, I have some more to get into this. I'll probably maybe save it for a little bit once we get into the movie. I don't know if we'll go full on spoilers or not. We'll just play it by ear. But yeah, I mean, I do think they're doing the right thing, especially if anyone's seen the movie. It does enough to at least, you know, move to a four. So I'm with you on that front for sure. Another piece I heard, and this is probably the biggest news of the past week movie-wise, was Robert Pattinson. I think it's pretty much all but confirmed at this point that he's going to be the new Batman.
Yeah, that's certainly the rumor that everybody seems to be passing around, and I think there's probably some pretty serious validity to it.
Yep.
You know, I think Robert Pattinson, he suffers from being stereotyped because he did the Twilight franchise when he was younger. And
yeah.
That's certainly all I associate him with. So sure. When I heard the news, I personally was kind of bummed. I was like, this doesn't feel like Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little inclined, I think more inclined than most, to give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, because, you know, he's, you know, whenever I think of him, I just think of him as, you know, like he's a teen, you know, young teen heartthrob, but give him a chance to, you know, pack on some muscle and, you know, get a little bit more of the grizzled, you know, Bruce Wayne look to him, I guess.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll work out.
And I think you kind of hit it right on the nose. You know, I would probably say he's the first thing I associate, you know, Twilight and just those lot of movies. But in the last couple of years, he has taken on a lot of, you know, challenging and different roles to really break himself out of the mold of that. So, you know, I know he did that movie Good Time a couple years ago, and that was like a super underrated movie. A lot of people wanted that to get more Oscar love, a little more independent. But, you know, that's just an example of him like doing some different things. He also did a movie recently called High Life, which is kind of a weird movie. But again, I think he's shown the willingness now to, you know, definitely break past that that teen heartthrob role and template everyone associates himself with. So I'm kind of with you. You know, I think you can almost pick anyone for Batman or anyone for a, you know, a huge superhero movie role, and you're not going to please the masses. You know, there are just too many people to ultimately please with one casting decision. So, you know, I know people were flabbergasted when they decided they're going to move forward with Ben Affleck when they did the reboot of that. And, you know, those really aren't great movies, but I would say he's not a weak link in them. He's probably one of the more stronger points of both of those movies. So I thought he was a good Batman, and I, you know, don't remember exactly what the sentiment was when people, you know, had, when the news came out Christian Bale was going to do this. The internet didn't exist exactly how it does now. I mean, it still existed, but, you know, Twitter and Facebook and all these other apps weren't as prevalent as they are now. So I think there was still some, like, consternation with people when they heard that Bale was going to do the role. And, you know, obviously, everyone, especially huge Batman fans, they all have their own, you know, pluses and minuses and preferences. But I would think the majority of people think Christian Bale is a pretty strong Batman.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, in any major franchise, when you're making a significant change to the lead actor,
yep,
you know, there's going to be kickback. I remember, you know, when Daniel Craig took over for Pierce Brosnan, he didn't exactly, you know, fit the traditional build, and there was a lot of, you know, uproar, and people wanted Pierce Brosnan to stick around, and what we got is, you know, arguably the best James Bond to date. So, you know, could Ben Affleck have been, you know, in the best Batman conversation? Maybe. I mean, he was probably in two of the worst movies, but it certainly wasn't his fault by any stretch.
Right, right.
So yeah, I think, you know, I'm not going to make any rash judgments until I see, you know, some initial pictures, what he's going to look like as Bruce Wayne, and get a better feel for, you know, what the production of the movie is going to look like.
Yeah, let's at least see him first as a cape crusader, and, you know, maybe in a trailer. But I would say we can really start maybe judging a little bit once we see a couple stills. I remember everyone got really, really mad when we saw the stills for Jesse Eisenberg as, you know, Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
You know, the reaction was pretty negative. And, you know, when we saw the movie, it made sense. You know, I still think that was a huge, huge miscast. So I think once we start seeing stills, then you can kind of start being a little more judgmental. But until we do, then, you know, let's just kind of wait to see how this goes.
I remember when Eisenberg was cast, Bryan Cranston's name was getting thrown in the mix. And I don't know if there's ever any, you know, truth to him being seriously considered for the role.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, right at the top of his, you know, Breaking Bad fame, and it seemed like such a natural fit to transition into.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately for Pattinson, I don't think anybody else was really, you know, seriously in the mix, or
yeah.
I don't think there's a big audience backing behind a particular actor. So at least there isn't a huge disappointment that, like, he got it and this guy didn't.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you, man. Well, moving forward, Chris Rock is reportedly going to be leading a Saw reboot, and it looks like they're slating it for release next October, so right smack dab in the middle of Halloween season, October 23rd, 2020. Do you have any initial thoughts, Mr. John?
Is Chris Rock just producing it, or is he going to be starring in it?
I'm pretty sure he is just going to be producing it. The news that I'm reading, I'm taking this straight from Deadline. The story is being written by Pete Goldfinger and Josh Stolberg. Rock is going to be executive producing it. So I would be surprised if he had a role in it, even just like a small role. But the all intents is he's going to have like a lot of, you know, say and direction on this without actually directing. But he's going to be, you know, leading the charge on this reboot.
You know, I'm kind of interested by this one. I think, you know, the early Saw franchise, it was very unique, and I thought they did some great things with it from a horror standpoint.
Sure.
And from there, I think they just kind of worried less about the story and just, you know, how much can we up the gore.
Right.
To, you know, bring people back time and time again. So if they're going to do a reboot and come out with some, you know, fresh ideas and maybe even tone things down a little bit from how ridiculous they were getting...
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate the idea. I'm not a huge, you know, fan of the franchise as a whole, but I certainly enjoyed the first two movies.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a whole bunch of direct exposure knowledge to the movies outside of the first one. Every now and then, you know, just for my morbid curiosity, I might, you know, check out a little bit on the Sci-Fi Channel if they have like Saw 4 or something, but I generally am aware of, I've heard, you know, that the longer you go into the franchise, the lore just kind of gets very, very, you know, loopy and topsy-turvy. And like you said, there's a lot more of a focus on, you know, just the actual, you know, traps. And they themselves don't even make any sense. They're just kind of there to, you know, to shock. But I do really like the first movie. I've seen that a couple times. And, you know, the tension's high. And it does have one of the, you know, better all-time twists. It's that level where even if a person's never seen the movie, chances are they know exactly, you know, what the twist is to Saw. But I remember, you know, I think I was a freshman in high school when that movie came out, and it was a huge talking point. And then from there, you know, it just started a big franchise. But no, I like the first one a lot, actually. I think it's a really well-made movie, and James Wan kind of slayed his name there with horror on that. Did you see Jigsaw? Did we even talk about that the last time? Or
I did see Jigsaw.
Okay. What were your thoughts on that? Because I didn't see it.
I thought it was forgettable. I can't even remember what the, you know, the big climax at the end was. But that's the thing from a movie that, you know, starts off with such a great twist, especially in a franchise, is that they're always trying to one-up themselves and come up with a better twist. But when the audience is always looking for it, it's never going to land like it did the first time. So
sure.
You know, I'd rather see them sit back and really try to develop a quality story and then figure out, you know, how the gore is going to fit in after the fact, as opposed to, you know, vice versa.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if it's going to be a full-on reboot, so I do think there are, you know, worse things you could reboot. So I'd be interested to see what they, you know, kind of retain and, you know, what he'd like to kind of make new. So I do think there's an opportunity here. I'm guessing, though, you know, Jigsaw wasn't going to be the movie to kind of propel that franchise forward. So now we're just going to get a whole new interpretation.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the right move. And like you said, you know, there's, you know, when it gets closer to the movie getting released, I'm sure my morbid curiosity will get the best of me again.
So moving forward, I guess we can kind of keep it on the brutal note. So long story short, we're finally gonna get a Mortal Kombat movie. This has been, I think, years, decades in the making. The last time that Mortal Kombat hit theaters was 1997 in a, you know, all-time deplorable movie known as Mortal Kombat Annihilation. But the first movie, Mortal Kombat, I think that was 1995, it's still actually regarded as one of the better video game movies of all time. You know, it's not really a high bar, but I think for the most part, you know, they kind of did the franchise well enough. There's some things that are probably going to change, I imagine, once it finally hits theaters, but it's a lot closer than people anticipate. Do you have any excitement or expectations for this, John?
Maybe a little excitement. I remember when I saw the first movie, you know, I was pretty young at the time. I had dabbled in, you know, Mortal Kombat for Sega, and I knew all the characters. And I mean, man, the first time I watched the movie, I absolutely loved it. You know, it was entertaining. It was all, you know, fight scenes. The theme song was awesome. I did watch it again, I think my freshman year of college, and safe to say it's a movie that doesn't really age well.
Sure.
But, you know, it certainly appealed to me at the time. So I could see them, you know, and I might be a little past my Mortal Kombat days, but I could see them, you know, creating a new movie and, you know, bringing these characters to life, and probably that, you know, teenage boy, you know, era, you know, they could be a pretty big level of interest from them. That, you know, again, probably won't age very well, but might, you know, make a few dollars, in the moment.
Sure. And I think now, you know, I think it has the potential to probably hit a lot of different, you know, brackets. I'd be very interested in see, you know, when they're planning on releasing this in particular, like month wise, because they're aiming for 2021. We don't know exactly when, they're looking to get it out in theaters, but you know, you've got a whole new generation now of people who have been raised on the Mortal Kombat games, you know, starting with the reboot, it was on PS3 and Xbox 360. I played on that, you know, when I was in college, and I thought, you know, that studio did an amazing job of, like, kind of still taking, like, the first three original games, but kind of spinning it away a little bit and kind of propelling it into a new generation. I have not played the newest one. The newest one actually just came out a couple of weeks ago, you know, for all the main consoles, and you know, it's been getting some pretty rave reviews. There's some things people hate about it, but, you know, graphics and, like, actual fighting-wise mechanics, it's been getting some pretty tight reviews. You know, maybe at some point I might give it a run. I don't really have much time to play video games anymore. I'm not much of a gamer, sadly, even though I'm looking at my PS4, and it, you know, only time I usually use it is if I'm watching a movie or, you know, loading up something else. But I would never, I hardly ever play video games anymore, but I've heard some great things about it, for sure. So I guess this is all just, you know, timely cashing in on the Mortal Kombat buzz right now.
Yeah, you might as well strike while the iron's hot. One thing I never really thought about is the first movie, the plot seems kind of similar to Enter the Dragon.
Absolutely right. I think it is. I don't know if there's ever been any, like, yeah, we were ripping off of Enter the Dragon or something, but I mean, it's not a massive surprise, only because, you know, if you know anything about one of the main characters of the game, Liu Kang, he is pretty much, you know, a Bruce Lee, I don't want to say ripoff, but, you know, he definitely takes a lot of inspiration from that. So, but yeah, I mean, the more you think about it, and I really haven't given much thought to it, but it is very much, you know, an island fortress. They got this tournament going on, and there's some shady stuff in the background, but you know, there might be a bigger thing going on past the tournament. So, no, you're right. Very very much Enter the Dragon inspired. Even if you just look at certain scenes, how they shoot them, a lot of inspiration taken for sure. And it kind of starts right with the character Liu Kang itself.
Yeah, so not to go off on a tangent there, but the more I was thinking about it, I was like, man, these plots feel like eerily similar.
Yeah. Rolling through here, we're almost done, guys, I promise. I did not know that we were definitely getting a Purge 5, but we're going to get a new Purge next year. Typically, they release these movies right around kind of the June, July, more or less summer 2020, the summertime, so it is coming around summer 2020. And the series creator, James DeMonaco, he has come out and said that this is going to be the finale. So what's your overall, you know, appreciation, you know, love, interest in The Purge, Sean?
Well, I think it's time for a finale. You know, I never saw the first one. I watched 2 and 3 just because I love Frank Grillo. And sure. He was the lead in those. I was entertained by those. By no stretch do I think they're good movies, but I think just my love of Grillo kind of helped get me through them.
Yeah.
And then I did watch the first Purge, and I don't know. Definitely left me, unsatisfied. So,
yeah,
I think they've really, you know, done everything they can with this idea. It's probably a good time to put it to rest. I mean, I think they had a TV series on USA too.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some things I definitely like about The Purge. I think the idea itself is kind of original. If you start kind of drilling into, you know, the actual intricacies and stuff that does or doesn't happen, then, I mean, there's some stuff I definitely take umbrage with. But I've seen all of them at this point, so I definitely think the first one, in my opinion, still is probably the worst, just because they have this really cool idea, but they really condense it into like a home invasion movie for, you know, I'd say an hour and a half of the movie. So, you know, we don't really get to feel much of this, you know, societal experiment, and like you don't really get much of the satire as well. They very much play it straight like a home invasion movie. But the second and third, there are definitely still issues, and I think one of the things people don't like so much is, you know, they don't really hide the fact that they're satires, and they're very much, you know, kind of liberal movies, especially election year. That came out in 2016, a couple of months before, you know, we got a new president, so that was very much targeted towards specific things. But I do think that the second or third movies have kind of laid out that that feeling of what it would be like, you know, if a person did find themselves out on the street, you know, pretty helpless, you know, in this kind of urban playground. So they transition a little bit more from horror to more like action thriller with a little bit of horror. And I think it's kind of all the better for it. I don't think they're necessarily great, but I do like The Purge Anarchy. I enjoy Purge Election Year. I didn't mind the first Purge, but, you know, out of the four, Election Year, I thought kind of did the most with the premise and just having that, you know, experience of what it would be like if, you know, all crime was legal for 12 hours and, you know, a group of people had to survive and, you know, they slowly kind of start peeling back the pieces of, you know, what is the genesis really of this Purge and, you know, stuff that doesn't necessarily jive, but I do think it's a good idea that maybe didn't get the proper execution, but I don't think they're necessarily bad movies outside of maybe the first one.
Yeah, I mean, if they were that bad, they certainly would have spawned, you know, four movies in a TV series, or five movies in a TV series, I guess.
Yeah, and they do have some good stuff to them. So I will almost certainly watch the fifth one, especially since I know that it'll almost certainly be the capper. I guess I'm just excited or interested, I'll say, with how they kind of carry this out, because, you know, come 2020, when they're going to be releasing it, we're going to be in the midst of presidential ads and, you know, all that stuff right again. So I feel like, you know, they've already kind of hit on the uber conservatives. So I don't know, like, what they kind of can do with five. It's supposed to be a sequel right after the Purge Election Year. So I don't know if that seems like it's going to be, the new founding fathers, you know, drowned up one last counterattack to, you know, take back America, or if there's going to be some hidden things. I don't know, but I'll definitely watch it. And, you know, hopefully they kind of end it on a high note, not expecting a super high note, but I hope they can kind of cap this off okay.
Yeah. Yeah, if they bring Frank Grillo back, I'm all in.
Yeah, and I have to think they will. You know, if they're going to continue right after election year, probably getting the spoilers, but, you know, she did win the presidency, so, you know, I have to imagine Frank Grillo is still her right-hand man, you know, handling security and stuff. So I'd be super surprised if he didn't come back. I know we've kind of gone on and on, but one last piece I found was interesting. It was, again, not confirmed, but the Suicide Squad 2 sequel, however you want to, you know, refer to that. They're looking at Benicio Del Toro to be the villain in this next movie.
So, I mean, one, Benicio Del Toro is a phenomenal actor, Oscar-winning actor, and when he played a villain in, you remember the movie Savages?
Ah, that's one movie I never got to, and I'm kind of surprised because I do like, who directs that movie? Oliver Stone, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I like his stuff. I mean, Any Given Sunday is one of my favorite sports movies ever, but I have not gotten around to watching that. So I didn't know Del Toro was in that movie.
Yeah, it wound up not being as good as I – or as entertaining as I was hoping it was going to be. But sure. Del Toro was phenomenal as kind of like the main henchman for, I think, Selma Hayek. You know, really kind of a dark, twisted character. So I think, you know, he could be a great hiring for the Suicide Squad franchise, especially when they had such an underwhelming villain last time.
Yeah, that was – there was a lot of things, you know, obviously wrong with that movie, and I know you and I have kind of went in from time to time when the subject has come up, but the villain itself, man, that is, was it the Temptress or something? Just an all-time bad, you know, comic book villain.
Yeah, Enchantress, I think, terrible name.
Yeah, I butchered it, but it's not worth remembering, so that's why I butchered it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, when you look at comic book movies, all the great ones, I think it's safe to say, have a great villain that go along with it.
Yeah.
So I'd say they're on the right path here from, you know, a starting point.
And just to continue a little bit, because I'm reading some of this, there's no official word, obviously, because it hasn't been confirmed, but the overall character I think that he might be playing is going to be known as the mayor, described as an irascible old warrior who lives for war. So, you know, just a little bit of a tease. I guess the only thing I don't want to see him do is I don't want to necessarily see him caked with makeup. I know he's probably not going to, you know, look like how he did, let's say, in the Sicario movies, but I don't necessarily also want him looking like the Collector from Guardians of the Galaxy, you know. Maybe like a happy medium where you know that obviously he's wearing a costume and there's some makeup done, but I just don't want him to look like a super caricature. I want him to look threatening, you know, I want him to look semi-realistic, so, you know, we'll see. James Gunn is still directing, so, you know, I think there's hope that this could at least be better than the first movie.
Yeah, I think they'll probably want to distance his character as much as they can from the Collector, so I imagine some pretty stark differences in the appearance.
Yeah. But that's all I got, man. It was kind of a busy week, actually. I don't know if you had anything else.
No, that's it. I think you covered everything very well. So with that, we can go ahead and wrap up the real news section. And we'll take a moment to hear about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hello. Do you like having your podcast interrupted by promos? Probably not. So we'll keep this brief. My name is Chris.
My name is Mike.
And my name is Justin. And we just wanted to introduce ourselves. We're the Casual Cinecast.
We're a weekly podcast that reviews current movies and TV, as well as the occasional dive into classic cinema with the Criterion Collection.
We cover everything from Black Panther to Black Narcissus.
From Solo to Sallow.
From Love, Simon to Simon of the Desert.
If that sounds good to you, look us up on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. We'll see you there.
You know, or something, because we probably won't actually see you, but...
Yeah, we don't see them when they listen.
Right, well, okay. Well, back to your podcast.
Hello, everybody. My name is Daverne, and I am the host of the Cinema Recall Podcast, which you can find at thatmomentin.com. On each episode, myself, along with a great guest, we will discuss in detail an iconic scene from a classic movie. So come check us out. We are available on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and most other places you can find podcasts. We are also on Facebook, just type in Cinema Recall. And we are also on Twitter at @cinema_recall. We hope you enjoy the show, and thank you for listening.
And welcome back to Cinema Recap. We've got your hosts, John and Mark. And I think we'll go ahead and dive into the box office recap.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
So coming in at number five, we've got The Hustle. In its second week, brought in another $6.1 million domestically. Number four, we've got the new release, A Dog's Journey. brought in $8 million domestically. Down one spot from number two is Pokemon Detective Pikachu, brought in another $25.1 million in its second week. Down and officially dethroned, no less, we've got Avengers Endgame in the two spot, brought in another $29.9 million domestically, which has brought its entire tally up to, looks like, about $2.6 billion, which I want to say it's a little more than $150 million away from overtaking Avatar as the highest grossing movie of all time, not adjusted for inflation. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mark, this is definitely going to happen, right?
I'd have to think so. You know, I if we take precedence over, I guess, prior, you know, Marvel movies, they usually have pretty long legs. And, you know, when I say long legs, sometimes we'll see them come back in theaters after their initial run just to see if they can get some more box office clout. I mean, I know my theater's still running it pretty heavily. Started to slow down a little bit, but, I mean, it's still going to probably play into, I mean, we're coming up on June here, so I'm trying to think what else they could kind of do, but I think it's going to happen, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt at this point. It's probably got quite a few weeks left still, and, you know, internationally, it's just going to keep pulling in a bunch of money. And it looks like a rough estimate for the budget was $356 million, which is just insane.
Yeah, it is. They did that here in the U.S. in one weekend, pretty much.
Yeah, got their money back right away.
Yeah.
So without further ado, we will dive into the new number one movie for the first time in the past month. We've got John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum, brought in $56.8 million, which is, as we mentioned earlier, it's darn near double what John Wick 2 brought in. So successful franchise, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Mark, you and I both saw this one. What were your thoughts?
So my thoughts were, I think it's a hell of a good time. I actually have a post on it on thatmovement.com, but I made it a very clear point that, you know, there's John Wick 1 violence, there's John Wick 2 violence, but then there's John Wick 3 violence, and it's just, it's kind of miles different than the first two movies just as far as bloodshed goes, and I'm making this sound like it's a super, you know, savage movie, but, you know, I do think it's a little more graphic, for sure. I think the first, you know, 20-30 minutes are almost nothing like the first, you know, two movies. I made it also another point in my piece to kind of compare it, but I got very much vibes of even Mad Max Fury Road mixed with, like, Escape from New York, the Kurt Russell movie, and The Purge, The Purge Anarchy. You know, I felt that it had, like, all three elements of those movies, because the first 20-30 minutes are just, like, a thrill ride, man. I say, yeah, from about minute five, when he first steps into the library and takes on future NBA Hall of Famer Boban Marjanovic, till about when he finally leaves, you know, New York, or, you know, he has to try to cash in on his favor. It is just, there is no letting up, man. You know, it is very much just action, 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 action. You know, if you feel it in the theater, it's just like, I can't take a breath because there's just so much stuff going on. And I kind of feel like, you know, Wick, he didn't have much of a shot to really catch his breath. It was just move on to the next, you know, next spot. And I hope I have some time to breathe, but I'm probably not going to get it. And that's how I kind of felt for the first 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, I think they did a great job mixing it up at the very beginning. You know, I think a concern with these movies is, you know, it's so heavily based on hand-to-hand combat and, you know, gunfights that stuff can get, you know, pretty stale, especially going into a third movie.
Yeah.
So I think kind of the unique twist they put on, you know, the fight scene in that apartment, I think, or some, wherever they found all those knives at, you know, I thought that was awesome, and that they brought some pretty serious gore there, I would say, too. You kind of mentioned the violence that they upped the ante for in this installment. And then, you know, some kind of unique chase scenes as well, unlike what we've seen in the first couple movies. So, yeah, I thought they did a really good job at the starting point. And then, you know, they kind of continued down that, you know, chain with going to unique terrains, I guess, or unique destinations.
Yeah. So, you know, overall, I like this movie. I like it in certain spurts more than other spurts. I would say kind of the second act of the movie, there's like a stretch, I'd say, for about 10 to 20 minutes where, you know, we know this is a very different world than what we live in. And, you know, the filmmaker, Chad Stahelski, he, you know, doesn't shy away from that fact. You know, these assassins, they live in amongst us, but they operate on very different, you know, rules and tangents and stuff. But there is kind of a point, especially in the second act, where I felt like it kind of just got a little bit too mystical. There are some things there I'm just like, feels a little bit like a different movie, even more so with like how the world building's been great, but I just feel like there is an aspect or two where it just kind of felt completely like a different movie. And it did kind of pull me out of it a little bit. This is almost, what, like a two-hour, 30-minute movie, so at times it does kind of feel a little elongated. And I'd say that second act, you probably know exactly what I'm kind of referring to.
Yeah, I think I do.
That point, right after, you know, you get one of the bigger set pieces of the movie with Halle Berry, where, you know, John has to kind of go on this, you know, mission to find the next person above the high table. It just kind of drew me out of the movie a little bit. It felt very far-fetched, and again, it just felt a little bit more mystical than kind of this world we were led on to believe. So that's a part of the movie where I really could kind of care less for.
Yeah, it felt like the Uncharted video game franchise, if you're familiar with that at all.
Yep, it's funny. I don't know. Did you read my piece?
I did not, actually. Did you mention that?
I did mention that. Yeah. I mentioned that like in the second or third paragraph, but yeah, the Uncharted, Uncharted 3 in particular. I like the Uncharted games, and Uncharted 3 has amazing production, some really cool firefights, etc. But you know, it's probably not my favorite game of like the trilogy. I've not played 4. Again, I don't play video games as much anymore. But I've not played 4, but I played 3, and there's some really good set pieces. But the story at times just get very, very kind of, you know, mystical, and there's some other stuff going on with Drake, and you know, it gets kind of weirdly hypnotic, and you know, even thinking about it now, I still don't know if I, you know, recall like half of the story. I just kind of remember all the cool firefights, but that stretch in particular of John Wick Parabellum reminded me of Uncharted 3 for sure.
Yeah, could not agree more. And actually, thinking about the John Wick movies, they almost have a video game feel to them, where it's like,
they do, yeah.
You know, 5 or 10 minutes of action, you know, 1 or 2 minutes of dialogue, and you just kind of jump back and forth the entire time. But I'm not complaining. I think the way that the movies flow, you know, certainly works and keeps me on my toes. But just food for thought.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, I guess since these movies are, you know, all about action, and, you know, again, they don't shy away from that fact. A lot of, you know, pretty good set pieces. I will say this, though, about Chapter 3. I think the action is a lot better when it's not, you know, guns. I think it's a lot more inventive when they are kind of doing a lot more hand-to-hand. And I think this hand-to-hand in this movie is probably the best out of the three movies. There's just really, really long you know, fight sequences where, you know, guns aren't used, but it's a lot more, you know, Japanese samurai inspired, and, you know, and not so much as far as the gunplay. I don't think anything still in this movie, there's some fun shoot 'em up moments, but I don't think anything still tops like that first Red Circle club scene in the first John Wick.
Oh yeah, that part was awesome for sure. I think they definitely recognize that, you know, too much gunplay could, you know, put the audience to sleep. So I would say they really use that as a minimum until the climax, which I thought was, you know, pretty tastefully done. There's obviously the part with him and Halle Berry, I guess, but there was just so much going on right then.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot going on right then. And this would kind of also pull me towards another, I usually call it nitpick I have with the movie, criticism even, but I did feel the humor at times was a little too much for me. I'm okay with some of like the deadpan humor they kind of had in the first two movies, but some of it here just, I don't know, it pulled me kind of out of the. I'm not gonna say these are uber serious, you know, movies. This is R-rated franchise, you know, with pretty serious action. But I'm not gonna say it's uberly serious. But there's just like certain moments, especially with a couple hitmen, where, you know, it just, I don't know. I don't know why they kind of felt the need to go a little bit over the top with some of the dialogue and some of the humor. Maybe that's just a me thing. But did you also feel like the humor was a little awkward at times, or?
Were you thinking about the humor at near the end of the movie?
Yeah, I would say so. I guess there probably was more humor at the end of the movie than in, like, the actual, like, first two acts of the movie. But yeah, you know, when things are going down, it just felt like, you know, they're, for some reason or another, just trying to go a little bit more towards, like, little laughs. And I just found that sometimes it was funny, other times I'm like, I don't know if I would necessarily be, you know, laughing at this point.
Yeah, I feel like with John Wick, like you said, the deadpan humor, like I want to laugh at, you know, like, oh, this was, you know, like a violent irony or something of that sort.
Exactly.
Not
or
so
like
much
in the,
they're like cracking jokes.
In the first movie, I think one of the funnier, you know, stretches in that movie was, you know, when what's his name? The guy who owns a chop shop, John Leguizamo, he calls
him. Yeah.
You know, the boss, Vigo, and he tells him that, you know, I heard you slap my son. Why is that? Well, you know, John Wick, your son, he stole his car and killed his dog. Oh, you know, that,
yeah.
I don't know. That always gets me rolling no matter how many times I watch that piece. But, you know, if it was something like that, there's also a few other moments throughout the first two movies where I thought those were fine. You know, they didn't feel like they were trying too hard, but they definitely realized kind of the humor of the moment. With this one here, it just, again, it just felt like, I don't know, maybe that's supposed to be funny, like the fanboy aspect or something, but
yeah,
it just felt very, very puzzling to
me.
Yeah.
So, you know, three movies now in the franchise. Where does Parabellum rank for you compared to the other two?
That's a really good question, John. I honestly, all of them are kind of pretty close. I cast me on any day, I could probably say that this one is my favorite or this one's my favorite. When I first kind of thought about it, I watched it on Tuesday of last week, and when I first kind of thought about it the first 24 hours after I watched it, I was like, you know, I think this is my second favorite of the franchise, you know, and I think I might even put Chapter 2 as my favorite, but the more I kind of thought about it, I slipped away from it a little more. I'm like, I still like Chapter 3, and I still like Chapter 2, but if you hold an absolute gun in my head, I'll probably say I would go with 1 just because I do think there's a stronger emotional component to 1 that, you know, 2 and 3 necessarily don't have. I think 1 flows a little bit better, probably pacing-wise, than 2 or 3, but 2 kind of has a better climax, in my opinion. 3 has a lot more kind of just wild action scenes, but I probably have a little bit more to nitpick than the first two, so, wow, this is tough. I would probably say 1, I go 1, John Wick 1 is 1, I'd probably go 1, 2, 3, to be honest. Again, I could probably flip-flop here and there on the right day, but there's something about 1 where, you know, I would probably want to watch that a lot more, just a lot more than, like, 2 or 3.
Yeah, I mean, 1 was just so fresh, right, when it came out. It was kind of a resurgence for Keanu Reeves with this really unique, you know, hand-to-hand combat and gunfighting that I don't know if we hadn't seen it for a while or if we had never seen it, but regardless, it felt very fresh at the time. So I think 1 will always, you know, really have a special place in that regard. I was trying to think about it the last, you know, day and a half or whatever, which one was my favorite. And, you know, part of me wanted to say 2, but then you make some great points about 1. I don't think I could ever put 3 as my favorite, but it's just a matter of, you know, where it does rank, because I, like you said, the ridiculousness of the second act and kind of the mysticism gets a little too far out there for me.
Right.
But then, you know, when I think about it, the movie's, it's really all over the place. It's got some incredible set pieces. It's, you know, where one might get a little stale because it's, you know, you're stuck in New York the entire time. So by the end of it, the set isn't as fun. Whereas, you know, in two and three, you're really bouncing around. So, yeah, I feel like I'm inclined to say two is my favorite, but man, it could really change just, you know, by the hour.
Yeah, honestly, like, you know, I think that, you know, catch me on any day, my mood might say, yeah, two's my favorite, you know. I think the second half or two is pretty spectacular. I think just the overall climax of that movie might be the stronger climax out of all three. The one issue I kind of have with one is, you know, after, kind of right after, you know, John gets his ultimate revenge and he gets that taken care of, but then they kill Marcus. I kind of feel like the climax itself is kind of meh. You know, I like Viggo as a villain. I think he was a pretty good villain. I just don't really care much for, like, that final hand-to-hand fight. You know, I felt that was kind of boring.
Yeah.
I think some of the other climaxes in the franchise, 2 and 3 in particular, have been a lot stronger than that. But, you know, that doesn't wipe away the first, you know, 90 or 70, 80 minutes of the first John Wick. So I'm gonna get 3 when it comes out on Blu-ray. I'm sure I'll watch it, you know, pretty extensively as well. One of these days, I'll probably just watch them back to back to back. And it's kind of funny when you do think about how technically, you know, the first one came out in 2014, but chronologically or, you know, time-wise, these have all kind of taken place within a couple days of each other, which is, obviously, it's a suspension of disbelief, but it just kind of, you know, hits to the fact, like, I do think these are going to be made at some point to really just, like, kind of binge an entire day through, you know, if you haven't already done it. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of impressive when you do think about it. We kind of hit on the fact that there's going to be a 4. Do you kind of like the direction that this sets up to go into with this fourth movie?
You know, I do. I think it's probably the best direction that the franchise could go in, just because, you know, every movie, it's got to get, you know, bigger and more grand, and he's got to be taking on, you know, I guess, you know, not just more and more people, but, you know, more, I guess, higher ups in their world.
Yeah.
So I think it's certainly taking the most logical step forward. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I was actually kind of surprised at the actual ending, you know, and I'm kind of reading more about it. I guess it could kind of go in one of two ways. I think we've done pretty good as far as, you know, spoilers go, so I'm going to keep it like that. I'm not going to, you know, refer to anything explicit that happens, but I do think there are, you know, one or two ways it could go. I have an idea of how it's going to go, what tangent they're going to go into, but I'm pretty excited for 4. The only thing I do wish is, I know they said that, you know, as long as the fans and as long as Keanu wants to keep on doing this, as long as we can think about different, you know, story threads, and we'll make these, you know, conceivably for a little while. I honestly, I'm always of the belief, you know, stop while you're ahead. I think there's enough there to where they could close the book on 4. But maybe I'm just saying that now. Maybe they have some different ideas that I never thought they could get out of a fourth movie. So maybe it's just me kind of, you know, being a little cautious. But a huge part of me says I would love for them to kind of just end, you know, Wick's story one way or another at 4. And if you want to do, like, some spinoffs or something, then, you know, maybe I wouldn't necessarily be excited about those. But I just think there's enough there to where, you know, they can set this up as kind of like the last stand, you know, the end all be all, and really make a strong fourth movie that might not be as good as the other stuff, but it still won't be like terrible. So my gut says I would love to just, my heart says I would love for them just to end at 4.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping they were just going to do a trilogy, because it's definitely a franchise that I don't want to jump the shark. You know, I really like Keanu Reeves, especially from an action standpoint. But with having said that, I'm absolutely going to go see 4 in the theater, so I get why they would do it, and they've got enough of a story left to continue it, so why not? And I mean, man, if they ever decided to do a prequel with this, that would be, I would love to learn how he became John Wick. I think that'd be really interesting. It'd be tough to cast. I doubt that they would have, you know, Keanu play a younger version of himself.
Right.
So they really have to nail that. But if they cast the right person, I'd be all in for it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's a couple of different pieces you could still kind of go into. I know, you know, Reeves to me is kind of like Tom Cruise, where he's putting his body on the line for a lot of different scenes. And, you know, it might not be as much as like Tom Cruise hops off of a building and fractures his ankle, but, you know, 95% of this is still Keanu Reeves doing all the stuff himself. And he's like 55, still looking pretty spry and stuff. One thing I've always kind of want to know more about is probably like this impossible task. I know we find out a little bit about it too, but I would love to know, like, you know, what was the inner workings of all that? What were the machinations of that? We probably won't get it at this point since, Ricardo is dead, but I've always been kind of just enthralled by that whole, you know, piece where, finally Ricardo cashes in the marker and Santino, you know, he cashes in the marker and wants to, cash in, you know, Wick's loyalty or whatever. But I would love to see that. We're probably not going to get it, but I would love to see that. I just find it super surprising now that, you know, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that, you know, this might be Keanu Reeves' like role that everyone remembers him for, just because he's had three really strong movies. And I mean, I saw The Matrix when I was 9 or 10. I think it's a great movie. But, you know, he's done three of these, you know, in successive fashion now. And I do think, like, the trilogy overall has been a stronger Wick trilogy than his Matrix trilogy. I kind of think this might be his defining role now. Do you kind of agree with that or what?
You know, it's a little hard to say just because it's so, you know, fresh in everybody's mind. And I think The Matrix was revolutionary in a sense.
Yeah.
But like you said, I think the first Matrix is a great movie. I still enjoy the second and kind of enjoy the third.
Sure.
But I think people across the board would say that each one of the John Wick movies is great. So,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, the tide could easily be shifting in that direction as John Wick being his defining role. If he comes out and nails the fourth movie, I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty happy for Reeves. I mean, for all intents and purposes, he seems like a pretty good guy. Everyone knows at this point he's not like the most talented actor, but I do think these movies have very much played into his strengths. So I'm happy to see him kind of revitalize his career. I mean, it was probably on maybe like a C before, but he's back to being like almost an A-list guy now. I mean, this is still like his sole franchise, but it's kind of funny just seeing him, you know, do the nightly talk show circuit and, you know, getting hailed as like this, you know, A-list guy and stuff. So I'm happy for him. You know, it does seem like a pretty chill, easygoing guy. And these movies, this role definitely plays into his strengths, and they don't necessarily ask a whole bunch of him, you know, reaction-wise, which is probably good. The dialogue is kind of kept to minimum, but, you know, it's dialogue that, you know, I think he can say pretty confidently. So it's good to, you know, really see him immerse himself, you know, into this role. I always felt one of the more underrated things about John Wick is just how he looks. I think, like, they kind of nailed the character, you know, just as an aesthetic goes. You know, he's all about his suits, but they're simplistic suits, not flashy, but they're very like form follows function. You know, he's got that stringy black hair and the kind of like the light beard. I just think he's just kind of cool to look at too.
Yeah, he's got a very defining look. And man, at the end of the movie when he goes back to all black, finally gets the black undershirt back on. I mean, you just know he's in for business.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess one other thing is I'm surprised I didn't get around really seeing a full trailer for this movie. I always saw like TV spots, but I never saw an entire trailer. I don't know how I was able to pull that off. But so a lot of the stuff was a little bit of a surprise to me. I knew Halle Berry was in it, but you know, some of the more, I guess, shocking things I really wasn't expecting. So to me, it just kind of goes into my belief that if you can stay away from some of the stuff, because I really went in kind of blind. I mean, it was a John Wick movie, obviously, but I went in kind of blind, and I found that to be, you know, pretty surprising, especially with some of the more bigger set pieces.
Yeah, definitely helps in a movie like this, I would say.
Yeah. But yeah.
Well, I think with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up the box office recap. And let's do a real quick run through of what's coming out this week. So we got, looks like three major releases. We've got Aladdin, Booksmart, and Brightburn. Let's start with Brightburn. I know you're pretty excited for that one.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for Brightburn. That second trailer really did sell me. I just kind of did a quick Google search right now, and it looks like, I don't know if they're actually taking in reviews now, but it's only five, and they have it about 60%. So I do think it'll be kind of interesting to see, you know, if it's going to stabilize around there, if it'll get higher, if it'll get lower. I'm still going to be interested to see it. I don't know if I'll be able to go into it Friday, but maybe Saturday morning. So that's the one movie out of the three that I have a lot of interest in. And then if we just kind of go in reverse, actually the movie that's getting the widest release, I have the least interest in. But I've got a little interest in Booksmart. I don't know when I'll get around to checking that out, but it seems like not a 21st century. We're in the 21st century before, but it seems like a new generation's maybe Superbad. I've seen a trailer for it. So I think it's got some aspects of that kind of high school. You know, we haven't done much. Let's make sure before we go to college that we experience X, Y, Z. I've heard some pretty good things about it. So maybe at some point, you know, during its, theater time, I'll be able to check it out. But the biggest movie is going to be Aladdin. It's going to be the number one movie. I'm almost certain it will be. Especially since we saw John Wick take the number one mantle. I can't see it repeating 2 weeks in a row. I don't see the Avengers kind of ascending back to the throne. And we've got a long weekend. So, typically this is the time of year where school is either just about ending for the young ones or it's already ended. So it's going to be like a lot of families, I think, hitting this movie. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Aladdin's definitely going to dominate the box office. But, man, honestly, ever since, you know, pictures and videos have started getting released to this movie, it's been nothing but bad PR. So I'm really curious to see how this one does, because I really don't have any interest in seeing it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I actually had a screener to go to this, but I'm a little busy tomorrow. So unfortunately, I'm probably not going to be able to get to it immediately. But, you know, the few pieces I have kind of read on Twitter, since I think the embargo officially lifts tomorrow, is they can kind of talk about it vaguely, but they can't really, you know, get full on in depth. It seems like it's not bad. That's the main takeaway I've been hearing. It's not like a necessary game changer like the Jungle Book or anything, but I've been hearing that it's not bad. But for me, not bad is still something that I'm not going to rush out to see immediately. I might wait for, I don't know, third week or something like that if I really do feel like checking it out, or maybe, you know, taking a date to go see it if she's got interest in watching it. But otherwise, like, it's going to take a lot for me to, you know, really get psyched for this.
Yeah, it would have to have, you know, incredible reviews to get me in the theater to see this one. So probably going to be a pass. You know, I like Will Smith. I really like Guy Ritchie as a director. So I hope the best for them. I hope it's a successful movie that gets good reviews. But based on what I've seen so far, I just don't have very high hopes.
Sure, sure. Well, I guess we can do box office predictions. We both are very, very confident it's going to be number one. Do you have a number in mind that you think it's going to hit?
Yeah, I'll say 70.
Okay.
What are you thinking?
I think I'm going to go a little higher, actually. I'm going to go with I'll go 81 million. Okay. Like I said, I just feel like this time of year now, all the youngins are just about done with school, or maybe they're already done. So I feel like it's been a little while since we've had like a family movie, though I guess you can kind of still, people will still take their families to Avengers, but, you know, something that is kind of like PG focused. I feel like the last movie that came out like that was probably Dumbo, and Dumbo was pretty average on the most optimistic end. So I think, you know, there are families who are itching to take their kids to see something. So this is going to be it. I guess you can say Pokemon too, and Pokemon did okay numbers, but, you know, it didn't beat the Avengers in its first week. So, you know, yeah. I think that there's a gap for, you know, families who want to, you know, take everyone to the theater.
Yeah, you know, Aladdin could, you know, if it puts up, you know, 100 million plus, I wouldn't be surprised. If it puts up, you know, 50 million, I wouldn't be surprised. So I try to pick a number somewhere in between those two and hope for the best.
All right, so you've got 70 million, I've got 81 million. All right, we've got
81.
That
is oddly specific, Mark.
Sometimes I can be an oddly specific guy.
So, must be feeling good.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I think I'm going to try to catch Brightburn at some point this weekend, and hopefully I can probably write about it. At least I'll have some thoughts down by maybe the time we meet next week. Pretty sure we're doing a pod next week. Are you cool with that, John?
You know, I am going to have a buddy in town staying with me, so...
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about
it. All right. We'll take it offline.
Cool. But yeah, you know, anything that you're going to be itching to get to? I know we both had some interest in Brightburn, but anything that you kind of got to get to the theater to?
Not this weekend. I'll probably try to see Brightburn if I get a chance.
Okay.
I'm pumped for Godzilla. I'm a big Godzilla fan, so I'll be really looking forward to that the following weekend.
Okay, yeah, and I feel like technically, obviously, the summer season's already started, but we're getting some big stuff. May 31st, we're previewing it, but Godzilla, Rocket Man, which is doing some pretty good reviews right now, 88%. And then a movie I have interest in, I don't know if it's going to be good, but I am interested, is Ma. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, we're going to have a pretty interesting release weekend next week as well.
Yeah, I'm excited for it, man. We'll have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. But I think that wraps it up, man.
All right. Well, Mark, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad we're able to get the podcast rolling again. And just appreciate everybody for tuning into this week's edition of Cinema Recap.
Absolutely, you guys. Take care of yourselves.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site, thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.